Hey, nurses! This National Nurses Week 2025, it's time to celebrate you, the backbone of healthcare, with a vacation you truly deserve. Join Nurse.com for a luxurious group cruise aboard Virgin Voyages, sailing May 9th through May 14th. It's a celebration like never before, designed exclusively for nurses. Picture this. Tranquil ocean views, world-class amenities, and the chance to connect with your nursing community while leaving the stress of long shifts far behind. Plus, when you join us, you'll receive $200 in onboard credit per cabin to enjoy spa treatments, premium excursions, merchandise, and more. You spend every day caring for others. Now it's your turn. Let's trade scrubs for sandals and sail into National Nurses Week with joy, connection, and well-deserved relaxation. Register now to join the group trip at nurse.com/cruise. That's nurse.com/cruise. We can't wait to celebrate you. Hey, nurses. Welcome to the Nurse Dot Podcast, giving nurses validation, resources, and hope one episode at a time. Today on Nurse Dot Podcast.
I've flown on hundreds of flights, and you're quite literally sitting next to somebody for hours on end, and they're just opening up to you. And it's very heartwarming to have that one-on-one interaction. And I think that is really why most of us got into this profession to start with, to heal somebody, whether that's physical or emotional.
Joining us today, Bob Batchelor, an expert in flight nursing and patient transport with over 30 years of experience. From the high-intensity world of trauma ICU to leading flying angels, Bob has dedicated the past two decades to ensuring patients travel safely on commercial airlines worldwide. He shares the unexpected challenges of the profession, from navigating dementia patient transport to the emotional impact of end-of-life reunions. With Flying Angels earning over 250 five-star reviews, Bob's stories of critical care, logistics, and thinking on the fly might just make you laugh until you cry.
I'm your host, Kara Lunsford, registered nurse and VP of Community at nurse.com.
Bob Batchelor, I'm really excited to have you on the show. I can't tell you, we tracked you down.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think that it's a little scary, but you know.
It's a little scary. It's a little stalkerish, but the podcast coordinator, Rhea, she really wanted an episode on this very subject, which is basically, she wanted to know about flight nursing. She thought it was a fascinating field. I agreed with her. I had found your organization, reached out to some person, just literally cold called, and was like, hi, is there anyone over there that would be interested in talking to me on the podcast? And then, of course, life happens, and it worked its way to you eventually. And here we are, Bob.
Oh, I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Bob, tell me a little bit about just yourself. How did you get started in this? How did you just get started in the healthcare field to begin with? And then, like, how did you make your way into this area of healthcare?
So nursing was kind of a second career for me. I was only 30 at the time. I knew if I wanted to have a family that I needed to have some kind of stable backup income. I was a serial entrepreneur prior to going into nursing. And, you know, as you well know, failure is often a point of that. And I said that if I'm going to have a family, I wanted something as a backup that I could do in the event that one of my, you know, my businesses didn't work out. I never expected to make a career out of it. And I went to Community College of Philadelphia in 1989, graduated in 93, wound up working in an ICU, a trauma ICU, right out of nursing school, which I was very excited. And I said, oh, this is fun. So, you know, my path in the beginning.
Such a typical dude. I have to say, like, such a typical dude. Like, so many of the men that I know are like trauma. They're like, I'm going into trauma.
You know, I hate to be a stereotype, but I am going to be that stereotype. I did trauma. I did burn. I did ICU, you know, you. I did all of the guy things, if you will, and I love that. I worked as a contract nurse soon after my 2 years were up at the hospital I was staff nurse at. And I would just work all over the city of Philadelphia in all the trauma units and I worked in all three of the burn units here in Philadelphia. And I thought it was, I had a great time doing it. It was a lot of fun being the guy, the dude, if you will. Well, you know, I wanted to be a flight nurse. That was kind of like the be all, do all, end all of what guys want to do. Well, the problem that I had is I live in Philadelphia and we're a major metropolitan area and there's just not that many flight nurse positions, you know, when you have five level one trauma centers within a 5 mile radius. But if you want to live in a rural area, the opportunities for rotor wing nurses are much better.
Is that what they call them? Rotor wing?
The helicopter nurses are referred to as rotor wing.
Oh, that's so interesting.
That's what it's referred to in the industry.
Okay.
Yeah, but I do happen to live close to Philadelphia International Airport. So I guess it was way back in 2004, a friend asked me to fly his grandfather from Sarasota, Florida, up to Toronto, Canada. And I said, well, sure, I'm a nurse. And as many people who work with the dementia crowd know, which I didn't realize at the time, a lot of folks with dementia respond better to caregivers than they do to family. So that was one of the reasons that that the family didn't want to do it themselves. So I said, sure, I'm a nurse. I can do this. And I flew down to Sarasota, and he was a cantankerous old cuss. I picked him up. We got him on an Air Canada flight. And took off. I'm sitting there in first class because I said, we're going to fly in first class. And this was the first time I had ever flown in first class in my life. I thought this is really cool. You know, patient sitting next to me. I'm reading SkyMall, having a grand old time. That'll date me. And all of a sudden, he stands up. Help, help, I'm being kidnapped. I'm being kidnapped. Well, and you have to keep in mind that this was not that long after 9/11. And nobody had a sense of humor on airplanes anymore. I mean, it's just, you know, it was funny. So I did what any good ICU trauma dude nurse would do.
You gave him some Thorazine.
Held all right through the pant leg. Boom.
Pop. I had the same thought.
Well, I think any of your listeners are going to think the same thing. Sedation. And that's what I did. You know, 5 milligrams of Haldol right through the pant leg. Boom. He sat down. I just said, oh, Grandpa had a bad dream. He's fine. Sound asleep. And he was sound asleep for the rest of the trip. Taking him off the plane, he was sound asleep. Wheeling him through the airport. It was fine. I handed him off to the facility. And I was like, yeah, he's really tired. He had a long flight. And I was like, wow, this is what I want to do for my career. Because I've always loved aviation. I've always loved airports. I love patients.
Let me just tell you, there's plenty of people out there that are not in need of this type of service, but would welcome someone sedating them on the plane. Mm-hmm. You know, people who are afraid of flying, like they're like, hey, they're like, I can call Bob. Bob will just.
we get more of those requests than you imagine. And that is a concern. 25% of our patient population post COVID are dementia patients, yeah. Cognitively impaired patients. And, you know, when we're transporting anybody who has the potential to become aggressive, the potential for agitation, we're going to want to make sure we have that sedation of last resort. In other words, we're always trying to manage the patient. We're always trying to keep the patient calm. You know, we're always kind of giving some kind of proactive oral sedation and try to give them oral sedation through the flight. But we always kind of want to make sure we have that, you know, last resort if we need to do it. And, you know, over the course of the last 20 years, I mean, maybe half a dozen times. So it is a very, very rare event. You know, and we never plan for that. If somebody's combative, you know, we're not taking them on a commercial airline. So it's one of those that has to go into the kind of the planning and the operations of things.
Yeah. We joke because we're nurses, so that's what we do, right? So
we joke very darkly.
We joke, yes. We have a very morbid sense of humor. But candidly speaking, any even a layperson who's listening to this podcast episode, you know, if you're a parent, how many parents out there have like medicated their child with Benadryl?
Oh, yeah.
And like tested it out beforehand to make sure they didn't have some sort of paradoxical reaction. And then after they use that because they're like, I don't want my 2-year-old like screaming on the plane. You know, so I think all of us have had those moments where we're like, how are we going to control this with medication?
Yes. Absolutely. And it's funny, my daughter travels with her dog. And the dog is a comfort animal, and she sedates the dog too.
Yeah,
I mean,
oh,
before
for
she
sure, for sure. I mean, I was just on a flight with someone who had a cat, and the cat was like, you know, you can't see my face on this podcast, but I'm basically like squinting my eyes and literally just looked stoned. I mean, like completely stoned. And I was like, oh, what'd you give your cat?
Can I have some of that?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think that it is just fascinating. I'll tell you, Bob, this is so, it's kind of surreal, but today I got a message that one of my longtime clients who I've been with for like 10 years, once a year, he will hire me to transport him.
Okay.
So he flies me out first class, which is always amazing. Puts me up, and then I fly back with him private from, like, Europe.
Okay.
Only because there's been a situation where he aspirated 30,000 feet in the air.
Okay.
Years ago. So now my job is really just to make sure that his head of bed is elevated when he's sleeping on the plane. You know, I tell him that he can't eat 2 hours before and he listens to me because very similar to what you just said is that he listens to caregivers. But if his son or, you know, one of his sons was to tell him this, he'd be like, I'm not doing that, you know. But because I'm on the plane with him, he listens to me and we get him home safely and he doesn't aspirate and all is good, right? So that being said, I totally understand the whole companion thing, the flight companion thing. And I think it is a great gig for nurses who are looking to do this. So tell us a little bit about your company.
Okay. So what we do is we have nurses and doctors all over the country. Now, for the last couple of years, all of our nurses have been per diem 1099s. What we've discovered is we have, you know, the old 80-20 rule where you have, you know, 20% of the nurses doing 80% of the flights. So, you know, we're kind of transitioning to an employee model this year where our nurses are actually, you know, our W-2 employees. Yeah, we have about 70 doctors and nurses all across the country who fly for us. All of our nurses are, you know, minimum of 10 years ICU critical care experience. You know, we're looking for that critical thinking background. It's going to be one nurse and a patient, you know, at 35,000 feet. And you need somebody who has, you know, really good critical thinking skills and good clinical skills in general. We make sure that that our staff are well vetted. To be fair, most of our nurses are seasoned nurses. I would probably say the average age of our nurses is around 50 to maybe 55. So this is kind of a second career. Nurses can make more money working in the ICU. I did per diem work for a good portion of my career, and I know what a nurse can make doing a 12-hour shift in the ICU. And I know what some of these contracts, remote, will pay. I mean, they pay an awful lot of money, which is terrific for nurses. I mean, don't get me wrong. I one of the early podcasts, people were talking about getting paid, $8 an hour when they started nursing. And I think I started around 14 when I started, $14 an hour. And I thought at the time, I was like, well, I'm big cheese. But most of our nurses who fly for us, again, have raised their kids, their kids have moved out, and now they're saying, I want to do something that is fun, that's enjoyable. And, to be fair, I think what we do is the most amount of fun that you can have as a nurse. You're doing one-on-one patient care. You're getting somebody where they need to go in, what could be, I don't want to say crisis, because again, we're not an emergent service, but you and I, we share a passion for hospice. We transport some people in their final days, or, when they know that they're going to pass and, they want to pass at home. We're often of great service to the Indian diaspora here in the United States because they want to die at home. As any hospice nurse will probably tell you better than I can, I just wish they didn't wait so long until things were so close to the end for us to transport them, because we're transporting some people who, you get them there and, you hear 24, 48 hours later that they passed, and that always kind of, gives us
That's a little like Weekend at Bernie's, Bob. I'm just saying, that's pretty close.
That's pretty close.
Propping
them
up.
And we do some low Glasgow coma scale patients, traumatic brain injuries, and stroke patients that may very well fit into that criteria. Especially transporting people overseas. We're having a grand old conversation with them, talking them the whole way. And I know they're, Glasgow Coma Scale 3. So we're not, we're not getting any response. So, yes, Weekend at Bernie's is a good way to describe that.
Yeah, I would say that what has really prepared me for things like flight nursing or private duty, concierge, mm-hmm. where you're in situations where you don't have everything available to you. I've found that sometimes nurses that come right out of the hospital are definitely used to having a med room, mm-hmm. and everything available and supplies. And it's definitely a transition, right, over to that kind of way of thinking. Mm-hmm. One of the things that definitely helped me was going into home health. So working in home health, working Absolutely. In hospice, realizing like there's only so much I have available to me mm-hmm. in this home, in my bag. I can't just call to the pharmacy and have something tubed up to me.
Right.
And also mission work, medical missions. I worked in Haiti. Talk about not having anything.
Austere conditions. Yeah.
You just don't have the stuff that you're accustomed to having. Mm-hmm. So I would say that anyone who's interested in going into this field, I don't know if you agree with me, Bob, but like moonlight in some of these areas of home health or hospice or doing a mission or something like that, because it helps you get a little bit more into that MacGyver mode mm-hmm. than sometimes what we're used to in the hospital.
Absolutely. I often have conversations with our friends in the air ambulance industry. When I was an ICU nurse, you would go into the hospital and it really didn't matter what your patient was. It didn't matter whether they were vented. It didn't really matter if they were on ECMO, 15 drips, that's fine. As you identified, you're in the hospital setting, you have everything you need. In the air ambulance world, you know, their planes are configured, they have their ventilators, they have their drug boxes, they have everything they could possibly want for a patient. So what the patient is doesn't necessarily matter a whole lot. They can be doing ECMO at 35,000 feet if they have the right equipment. When we're transporting a patient on a commercial airline, to your point, no, we don't have a med room in the back of the airplane. I had a patient a couple of years ago. I was transporting to Hong Kong, and he had a gastric fistula. And they had decided the day before he was going to go to Hong Kong to start feeding him. And he had some fried chicken and some hamburgers. And I'm about an hour and a half into this 14-hour flight to Hong Kong, and all of a sudden, he starts erupting through his gastric fistula. Now, fortunately, he wasn't in any catastrophic distress, but I had some dressings to pack him and keep him clean. Well, I wound up using those dressings in about the first hour of this flight. So, okay, I'm down to 12 hours, you know, and I've had this guy erupting. Well, I realized that they have feminine products on this airplane, and we were on a 747. So I wound up going over the course of the next 10 hours. I was in every single bathroom on that plane, taking out all the feminine supplies, and I was using them to pack his fistula. Now, I always left one or two in every bathroom. But whoever had to restock that plane when they were done is probably like, they emptied all of the bathrooms. I mean, and this is a 747. There's a lot of bathrooms on a 747. So I went through a lot of product there. But as to your point of MacGyvering, yes, that's what it takes. It takes sometimes being creative to get what done.
That's amazing. I was on a concierge private duty thing in South Africa. Okay. And I was talking to a bodyguard, and he was like, oh, I carry tampons because if I get shot, mm-hmm. I'm going to stick the tampon in yep. the bullet hole wound. And mm-hmm. I was like, what?
Man, they're sterile.
Yeah, and they expand, mm-hmm. And they create pressure in yeah. the area to, like, stop the bleed. And I was like, that is fascinating. And they even have an applicator, so mm-hmm. you can, like, stick it in. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's amazing. Attention, amazing travel nurses. Discover Court Furniture Rental for stress-free furnishing solutions. Perfect for those always on the move, Court, spelled C-O-R-T, delivers and sets up furniture, housewares, and electronics nationwide in just 48 hours. With Court, moving is easy. Choose from curated packages or pick up items to suit your style. When it's time to move on, Court handles it all. There's an exclusive offer, too. Use code NURSE15 at checkout for 15% off your monthly lease. Valid for travel nurses only. Visit court.com/nurse. That's CORT.com/nurse to get started today. With Court, the more you lease, the more you save. Terms and conditions apply. See the website for details. Actually, do you have any other stories like that? Because I think this is such a good learning experience for people thinking about going into the field, or maybe one of your nurses or doctors had to get resourceful.
Oh, we have it all the time. In many cases, we'll have flights getting changed or flights getting delayed. Years ago, we had a patient who was flying a patient through Moscow. Not that we've done that for the last couple of years, but they had a mechanical problem and they had to take the patient off the flight in Moscow and check him into a hotel for the night and stay with the patient at a hotel overnight. There are any number of cases where, you know, our patients who have had traumatic brain injuries, you know, that we're having conversations on the flight, you know, it's making, you know, the flight crew will come around. So do they want anything? Hi, John, do you want anything to drink? No, he doesn't want anything. He's fine. You know, nobody knows any better. So that's, you know, that's fine. We have had episodes where we've kind of had to improvise just to make sure the patient got to where they needed to go. You know, patients who are mobility impaired. Just last week, we had a flight we were going to do with a gentleman who had a leg fracture. And we were told when in our intake and when I was talking to the nurse that the patient could bend their leg. And our nurse gets down there the day before the flight. And they're like, Bob, this guy is 6'4". He has a leg extender on and he is not bending his leg at all. Now, normally somebody like that we'd put in a first class seat. But, you know, if you imagine somebody who is very, very tall, no, we're not getting him into a first class seat if he can't bend his leg at all. So we just kind of improvised. We wound up, you know, getting a full row of coach seats on the same flight. We put him in a full row of coach seats and, you know, everything went fine. So I was a little improvise and adapt on the fly there.
That is a great solution. Mm-hmm. Like if you can't bend your leg and if they have, obviously, you know, the people that are hiring your company mm-hmm. have some level of means so that they have the financial ability to hire an escort to come with them.
Some of them do. To be fair, you know, a lot of people were transporting, you know, the $10,000 it costs to get somebody across the country. That is every penny in the world to them. And a lot of times people are reaching out to us because they talk to an air ambulance company, which is definitely can be a simpler way to go. But the air ambulance company quoted them $50,000. Well, that $10,000 that I'm saying is what it's going to cost sounds like a lot until you compare it to, you know, $50,000 for an air ambulance crew. We did a transport to India a number of years ago, and the family called me up and they said, we need to get, you know, grandma back to India. What's it going to cost? And I said, well, about $30,000. And the response was, is that all? I said, well, yes, let me guess. You were talking to an air ambulance company. Yes, they talked to an air ambulance company that told them it was going to cost them $300,000. So $30,000 sounds like an awful lot of money. But if you're comparing it to $300,000, it's pretty realistic.
Well, I think that there's so many situations, right? And you mentioned this a little bit earlier about how people kind of wait until the last minute to start thinking about where they want to die or where they mm-hmm. want their parent to die or grandparent. And that sometimes it's in their hometown. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's getting them closer. And we know that people spend the majority of the money that they're going to spend on healthcare, they spend it in the very later stages mm-hmm. of their life. So I think some of that should be around, like, where will somebody be the most comfortable? Mm-hmm. If you can save some money on medical treatments that you know are going to be maybe futile, and you can start having the end of life conversation a little sooner, and you can say, hey, you know what? I'd really love to have my parent who is back east. I want them to be out here with me. I can care for them better here.
Okay.
I can even save some money being able to care for them as opposed to paying caregivers who mm-hmm. might be back east. And you spend that money to get them out, then you have that quality time with your loved one, and you can actually make them more comfortable in the later stages and end of their life. So, I mean, to me, $10,000 to get somebody out safely mm-hmm. to wherever you need them to be so that they're closer to their family, that I think is just invaluable.
And a lot of these folks are paying an awful lot of money in facility fees if they're in a skilled nursing facility. I mean, we're talking
sure.
thousands and thousands of dollars a month. It's not uncommon for people to say, well, we want to get grandma out on the 31st because we're paying for this facility in this special needs skilled nursing facility in California. And we want them to be with us in Boston, you know, but we're trying not to pay a month where we're paying $4,000 here and $4,000 here. So
yeah.
In many cases,
and you're lucky if it's only $4,000. My grandmother was at a local assisted living and she didn't even have a lot of medical needs or medical mm-hmm. care. And she was paying $1,000 a month.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it. A lot of memory care facilities can cost a small fortune.
Yeah. And she didn't even need memory care. She literally was just there because, well, she was 90 at the time, like 94, and she had injured her hip. She didn't completely break it, but she fell and she injured her hip. And then she kind of got stuck there during 2020. So then we wanted to get her out at some point. But yeah, $6,000 a month.
Yes.
And yeah, you could totally save that and then spend that quality time, especially if you know that your loved one is approaching end of life or, you know, is a candidate for hospice or something like that, that being able to do that closer to home is such a better option, in my opinion. Of course, that's my opinion.
No, I completely agree. I completely agree with you. And that's what we love about what we do is, you know, we're providing that service and we're providing that ability to get somebody to their family when, you know, the family just has no idea how are they going to do this. And they reach out to us and they say, well, we have this and this and this and this and this. And that's fine. We're, you know, I don't want to say we've seen it all because every day is something new. There's always some new challenge and every transport is unique in its own way. But a lot of these problems, you know, we've seen before and we have resources and the ability to overcome them and get people where they need to go. And they're very happy about it. And, you know, one of the things that I'm just very excited about are what people have said about us on Facebook and Yelp and Google. I mean, hundreds of people have just said wonderful things about them that just humbles me and makes me feel very good about the service that we're providing. It's so much more than other positions where you just go in and you do a job. You know, we have a true passion and we're doing a true service.
Yeah. And it's so nice when you can, I know you said earlier, you can pick up an ICU shift and you can make a nice amount of money, especially if you're working registry or you're traveling or something like that. There's a huge need, obviously, in the ICU, but that's a lot of work. It's really hard. Right? It's hard work.
It is hard work. You know, I wouldn't want to make it sound like flying with a patient on a commercial airline is easy. But again, you know, in comparison, I think it's a little bit more relaxed than working a 12 or 16 hour shift in an ICU, which I've done many, many times in my career.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends, right? Like, I've worked some private cases where if I was stuck with them on an airplane for 10 hours, could be very challenging. But that being said, you're in, you're out. Mm-hmm. And I would guess maybe not the same amount of charting requirements as, I mean, I don't know what your charting requirements are like, but I imagine not like the hospital.
No, it's not nearly as much as what we did in the ICU. There's, you know, I kind of grew up in that document by exception kind of phase where, I mean, you're doing details, but I tell our nurses, if you've written a half a page, you're starting to push too much paperwork then.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is also really nice because I found that doing jobs where I was really able to show up for the patient and really do the patient care, those were the things that were just so satisfying and soul fulfilling. And you feel like, oh, this is what I signed up to do, like actually doing patient care and being with a patient and being present it's so nice. Even just being able to sit with someone and talk about things, like talk about their life. We've lost that art, I think, a little bit in the acute care setting, just because of time and other stressors and things like that, that you don't necessarily always have that ability to sit down with a patient and just talk about their life. And that in and of itself is so healing. For a patient, even somebody who has dementia, if you've worked with a dementia patient before, you know that sometimes just going along with the story is the best, like not going, no, we're not in your house right now. Mm-hmm. We're actually on a plane. Just kind of going with it and being like, yeah, so what would you like to do, you know, while you sit in your recliner, you know, like just playing into the story, right? Because when you fight them on it, sometimes that creates more agitation and all of that. So I think utilizing those parts of ourselves as nurses that we've learned is just, it's incredibly invaluable, I think.
Well, if my wife taught me anything, it's never argue with a woman. And I've taken that to heart when I'm transporting dementia patients. You know, and I tell people, never argue with your patient. Whatever your patient says is right. And in their reality, that's the way it is. And we've had the great opportunity. I've flown on hundreds of flights. And you're quite literally sitting next to somebody for hours on end. And to your point, and as you say, you know, yes, they're just opening up to you. And it's very heartwarming to have that one-on-one interaction. And I think that is really why most of us got into this profession to start with, to heal somebody, whether that's physical or emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. And so many times that emotional healing can translate into physical healing. And that's the magic, right? That's mm-hmm. the magic of healthcare and well-being. I think that sometimes we think it's a intervention, or we think it's a specific medication, or we think it's, you know, some other type of, you know, medical intervention. But oftentimes you can see really magical things happen. Like I imagine there's been times when I've been with a patient and I didn't really do anything quote unquote medical,
okay.
Right? I wasn't bringing in a new medication or scheduling them for a surgery. But after spending a few shifts with them in their home, their family starts saying, you know, my mom seems so much more lucid. She's doing things that she wasn't doing before. Mm-hmm. And what are you doing? And I was like, taking an interest. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's it. Like, I'm just spending time with them. And one time I brought like a VR set to a client's home.
Okay.
And I was taking care of her husband, actually, but she had dementia, kind of early stages of dementia. So I started bringing this VR set to the house and letting her have these experiences where she was surrounded by nature and she's like, oh my gosh, there's a bunny over there. And there's a, oh, there's a deer. Oh, there's a deer. You know, and she got so excited, but her memory actually improved through using the VR, which I can't explain it. I, you know, her family was like, what do you do? I was like, I don't know. I brought the VR. I thought she'd really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. She did. And now she wants to do it kind of daily. And she was showing some signs of improvement. So I think that we have those unique opportunities when we spend time with people. And that's exactly what you're doing and what the nurses and the physicians are doing when they get to spend time with these patients.
Yes.
Which I think is amazing.
It is. Again, I've said before, you know, I think what we do is the most fun a nurse can have in nursing.
Yeah, for sure. So mm-hmm. is there still opportunities for nurses or physicians to come and work for you?
Do you the population is aging, so we've done more flights year over year since we started. Well, I think there was that one hiccup back 2020 when things got a little squirrely in the aviation industry. But other than that, it's been steady growth, but it's hard to get into just because people who are in the profession just stay.
Well, you know, it's kind of like OB, right? Like people always want to go into OB, but no one ever leaves. Mm-hmm. And so it's tough. It's tough to, like, especially if you come right out of nursing school, getting into OB. Like,
sure.
Good luck. They're hiring people who have a lot of experience in OB, or they're just not hiring. And I think that that's a testament to the type of work mm-hmm. that nurses feel like they get to do in those types of industries. Mm-hmm. clearly the nurses that are working for you are really enjoying that work. It probably doesn't even feel like work to them. And that's what we all hope for, right?
Yes.
We all hope that we can find that job that doesn't feel like a job.
That classic line of, if you love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. And hopefully, you know, even through this podcast and spreading awareness about your organization, Flying Angels, is that nurses are sometimes the best evangelists of a good thing.
Yeah.
Right? So many times you've got a nurse who's probably listening to this podcast, or a doctor who's listening to this podcast. We have a variety of people that listen to this podcast, I'm sure, but obviously a lot of nurses and a lot of just healthcare professionals. But they're in a unique advantage to be able to talk to patients, right? They're at the bedside with somebody who does need to be transported, but isn't really a candidate for air ambulance or something like that. But they are right there at the bedside with the family members having these conversations. And hopefully they'll hear this podcast episode and they'll think, you know what? Now I know that there's this option. And what nurse doesn't want to be able to give their patients all of the options, right? And being able to say, hey, you know, you should look into Flying Angels because I listened to them on this podcast and it seems like a really good option for your family. Who knows, Bob, you might have to hire more people because after all the nurses start going, oh, you should use Flying Angels, all of a sudden you're going to be like, oh, shoot, we got to hire more people.
I would hope so. My running joke is if I had a nickel for every time I was at a conference and somebody said that I didn't know this service existed, I could retire. The only problem is I'd spend all my time counting nickels. So, you know, I'm going to Denver tomorrow for a hospice conference, the American Academy of Hospice Providers. I probably missed a letter in there, to share what we do with them. So that when they have their clients who are at end of life and say, I want to return to Boston, or I want to return to California, or I want to return to India, but I don't know how to get there, you know, that we can share that, hey, this is an option for you. And perhaps we can be of service getting their clients home at the end of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you familiar with LNEC?
End of life
Nursing Education Consortium?
No, I've not heard of that before.
I can definitely make some introductions for you. I think it's an organization that you should probably be connected with.
Okay.
And they should know about your services because they do so much educating of healthcare providers about end of life and around options. And so I think that would be such a good opportunity for you to get in front of some more healthcare providers as well, so that they can extend that message out to their patients.
I am forever learning about new organizations that I hadn't heard of before. And I'm like, I want them to know, you know, that we're there as a resource for them.
Yes.
And for their clients.
Absolutely. Well, okay, so if anyone wanted to reach out, learn more about your organization, whether it's because they want to be one of those one to two people that you might hire per year, or because they have a client, they have a patient, they have someone that they think would be a good candidate for this, or a family that they're working with, where should they go?
The easiest place to go is our website. We have a lot of information. We try to be very transparent about our service, what we offer, how it's done, what it costs. And that's just flyingangels.com. What I do encourage people to do is Google Flying Angels Philadelphia, because, you know, then you're not just seeing what we're saying, but, you know, that's going to take you to Google's reviews of us and Yelp's reviews of us and Facebook's reviews of us. And people have very graciously shared their stories. And any number of clients have said, well, I was going over those and I saw that this family had the exact same situation that we did. And, you know, the experience is wonderful. And grandma got to where she needed to go. And that's what we want you to do for us. So because I care a lot more about what others say about us than what I say. I'm only going to say glowing things about Flying Angels. What makes me very happy is when other people say terrific things about Flying Angels.
Yeah, I mean, having that kind of endorsement from families, you can't buy that.
No.
And it is a testament to the type of care that your nurses and your physicians are giving to those clients as they're in transport. So I'm going to definitely be an evangelist for your company, for anyone that I can think of that potentially needs that. And I'm so grateful that you took the time today to come on, talk with me, share some fun stories, have a little bit of that morbid sense of humor with me, which I always appreciate, and wearing that awesome hat.
Well, thank you. Well, people will never see me without a hat. So if you see a guy at a hat with a conference, that's probably me.
Got it. Well, Bob, thank you so much. I am incredibly grateful for the time that you've spent with me today. And for anyone who's listening, flyingangels.com or just Google Flying Angels Philadelphia, like you said, and you'll be able to see all the amazing reviews. Mm-hmm. And I'm just... thank you so much.
No, thank you. It's been my honor and pleasure to be on your podcast.
If you're a nurse or nursing student that enjoyed this episode, visit us at nurse.com/community, where you can find the NurseDot discussion group, a place where we dissect each episode in detail and delve deeper into today's topics. Nurse Dot is a Nurse.com original podcast series. Production, music, and sound editing by Dawn Lunsford. Production coordination by Rhea Wade. Additional editing by John Wells. Thank you to all the listeners for tuning in to the Nurse Dot podcast. Until next time, keep spreading the love and the care.